So I woke up, and I was just surrounded by a bunch of dead bodies. And that was, you know, my Tuesday night.
Dude, man, the mic's on.
Oh.
Anyway, welcome to another episode of Damn Art Majors. This is Lucky 22.
Live from prison.
yeah, episode 22. Your host, Dutters. I am joined with me also. to my left, we have
Adam Nesbeth Buccafusco.
And to my farther left, if you continue around clockwise,
Bilbo Baggins.
Bilbo Aaron Baggins.
Yep, Bilbo Aaron Baggins.
And
so,
yes.
So we're all now adults. We've had our shots.
Yeah, that's
in
right.
The last episode.
The thrill of drinking is slowly dying on us because we're now 22. Episodes.
What is it with turning 21 suddenly you don't want to drink anymore?
It's the novelty of it wears off.
No, it's you realize it actually costs real money. It doesn't cost like a pack
just,
of cigarettes. Or
yeah,
like,
you can't just pay $5 could get you anything when you're 19.
Yeah, it's like here's like $20 and you're drinking for like 3 days.
The good old days.
Yep. So, welcome to episode 22. I'm your host, Bilbo Baggins.
I do not get the reference. I mean, obviously, Lord of the Rings.
I decided we're going to do some quick news to start this episode. I'm going to start with an article that
this
I read.
This is why he doesn't host.
He
forgets the biggest.
No, but he's got it.
I'm doing it afterwards.
He's mixing up the order.
Hey, you want to try something new? You want to try something? Go ahead. Try something new.
I'm Bilbo Baggins. So anyway, in the news, our esteemed governor, Pat McCrory, again shows his mental prowess by making, you know, once again, more bad decisions. This time he completely ignored democratic process and open discussion with the North Carolina Arts Council by hastily announcing his choice for the coveted poet laureate position. He chose a state employee named Valerie Macon. Her work is largely unknown and primarily consists of only two self-published poetry collections. The North Carolina poetry community's response to McCrory's handling of the appointment was, "Roses are red, violets are blue, Pat McCrory looks like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates had a miracle baby, and smiles like Tom Cruise."
That was the worst poem ever. Especially that little improv outburst in the middle.
And then I killed it. In other news...
Come on, Bilbo, get your shit together.
Yeah, really. In other news, it's National Moth Week.
Like, this week?
Yes.
Or, like, 2 weeks from this week?
Last week was National Moth Week. What that means is you go outside and you look at some moths, y'all.
Or just open your closet.
Yep. By the time this episode airs, I think you only have probably 2 days to take advantage of this, but the Nasher Museum of Art in Durham has free admission until the 25th of July. Then they're going to install a Rauschenberg exhibit.
Can I go ahead and claim my moth for Moth Week 2015? A mere 50 weeks away?
Sure. What moth you got?
I haven't claimed it yet. I'm spending post-Moth Week.
You said it's free admission to the 25th of July?
Yeah.
So
next Friday is the
this episode
27th,
airs,
right?
This coming Friday will be the today's the 20th.
Uh huh.
So the Friday.
Oh, there's
the
25th. No way this is gonna.
Man, all of my news is pointless, y'all.
In the past news this week.
Yeah. So did you enjoy Durham?
You could have gone to the free admission at the Nasher Museum.
This episode is going to be called Not John Oliver's Last Week Today. So anyway, as Richard was stating before we started completely fucking up the intro of this episode, the poet laureate that was appointed Valerie Macon resigned 2 days afterwards because of the terrible response that she got. So we'll see what the hell happens with that, because that is just a cluster. But that will segue into Adam's apparently favorite segment of the show, which is What Art Thou Imbibing?
I doth imbibe the glorious, most famed
imbibe
of libations from the Americas.
I'm glad you said libation. That's a good word.
Yingling.
Yanglang.
Traditional.
It's Chinese.
It's from the East.
Fascinating. I am drinking from the Mother Earth Brewing, which is in eastern North Carolina. Is that Kinston? Yep, it is Kinston. Look at
that. Nothing good has ever come from Kinston.
This is actually Mother Earth Brewery is not bad. And this is their Weeping Willow Wit. I raided my mini fridge and found it in there.
That's
so
a good
I'm drinking
one.
It now.
Yeah. I'm drinking water. In art news, in art news, there was a wait. Do you guys have any announcements or anything?
No.
Oh
no.
Permits
a week.
Suck. there we go. Permits and permitting offices suck. Anyway, it has been pushing back my attempts to build the said sculpture for elementary school.
Mm.
And it is annoying.
Three
Do
at work.
Elementary schools need sculpture?
Yes. Everyone needs sculpture, especially if they're paying me to build it. Hear, hear.
That's right. Everyone needs sculpture.
Yep.
Everything is sculpture.
The Lego Movie is awesome. Go see it.
For the record, we did kind of debate doing a whole episode about how much we all love the Lego Movie.
Yeah.
We can talk about the Lego Movie for approximately 45 seconds. Go.
Everything is awesome.
Everything is cool when you're part of
part
the team.
Of the team, yeah.
Above Aaron's head is a whole lineup of Lego Movie Legos, and I have quite the collection. I am missing a couple characters, and they have discontinued the mystery bags. So if anybody out there, any of our beautiful, awesome listeners, has a extra President Business, you know, send it my way. Just saying.
You have a problem, man.
What?
Yep.
You have a problem.
No!
Yep.
No! It's a solution.
Anyway.
I'm partial to the Mexican bandolero guy you have up there. I don't remember him from the movie.
Taco Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, he was in that. Okay. Yeah. Damn, I forgot about that. Anyway. Aside from Adam's crippling obsession with Lego figurines, in art news, there was a German artist named, this was a listener submitted request that we discuss this article, a German artist named Sarah Schoenfeld, she had a series called All You Can Feel, which consists of high magnification images of various legal and illegal drugs that were photographed on exposed negative film.
Lisa Frank, eat your heart out.
We will be posting a link to the website in question.
So you guys can follow along with us. And where do you find that link? No place other than our Facebook or Twitter. So be sure to like us and favorite us and all that crap so you can keep up with us.
And you can check out our awesome bad Photoshops,
yes.
Which I will try to post one at least weekly.
All right, so I got the thing pulled up here. We can take a look at some of these. These are the narcotics.
They're very...
What's magic? Magic is code name for, I believe, PCP?
Could be. There's many different names.
Yeah.
They're very...
What's weird about the
cosmic.
The speed one is that it actually looks kind of plant-like in nature. Like frozen...
Like Hoth?
No, more like a frozen palm tree of sort.
It's just like
there's some really interesting like veins. Very leafy. Speed is very leafy.
These are all supposedly drops of these drugs, and I'm not sure how she went about...
I'm assuming they're suspended in some sort of saline.
Yeah. Or alcohol or...
Yeah, something. Because, I mean, like, you know...
And PCP is all blue and... magical looking.
Yeah, they're all pretty...
Why is LSD so boring?
Yeah, LSD looks like shit.
That's ironic. This is purple and a blue dot.
LSD looks like it should be switched out with heroin.
Ketamine, that looks delightful.
Heroin's kind of...
Heroin's kind of kind of about what I figured heroin would look like.
I don't see a purple dragon in there at all.
So, all you heroin addicts are wasting your time.
Stop chasing it. They're all pretty...
Ecstasy looks like a turtle.
Pretty cosmic and spherical, crystalline.
That's my quote for
shapes.
This episode.
Ecstasy looks like a turtle.
Ecstasy, yeah. Now, crystal meth for all you Breaking Bad fans. It's actually kind of blue.
And well, it's also going to have a crystalline structure, so...
So what do we think about this, guys? Cocaine looks like an aquatic shell.
It's like a jellyfish.
Yeah.
I think the colors are pretty nice in contrast with the isolated nature of the shapes. Like, the actual droplets have probably two-thirds of the photograph is negative space.
Yeah.
Usually it's a neutral tone or some low-key, just boring color.
I kind of wish some of they weren't all centered.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the...
Do you think composition was a big thing in these photos?
Probably not, but I wish it had been. Because to me, they look just like medical slides. It's kind of difficult for me to see them as anything more than that. I mean, they're fascinating. They're really neat. And I would totally look at them in a medical journal and be like, yeah, this totally makes sense. Okay, cool. But if you want to push it beyond that, I really think composition needs to start happening.
The same listener also suggested that we take a look at the extra article about the alcohols. The same process was done with some of our favorite beers, and kind of like what you drink in, only close up. An English oatmeal stout. What do you think of that? That's kind of...
See, that has a composition... I mean, granted, it's... Or I guess I'm assuming an organically... Yeah, or, well, chemically created. She didn't really manipulate it.
Beer probably has, you know, a higher particulate count than...
Yeah.
I mean, much more finer particles than hard drugs.
I find the alcohol imaging much more fascinating, more...
Yeah, it's got some real abstract expressionist qualities to it.
It doesn't look like a slide. Like, if you put this and you put the title under there, "Sex on the Beach," and you showed me that picture, I would probably sit there and try to understand it, mm-hmm. and then I'd finally go read the little artist statement and be like, "Oh shit, that's the drink."
Yeah.
Oh, whoa.
So, this is an American Pale Ale we're looking at. There's definitely a little bit of a composition. Understandably, like, that was not the intent.
It could have been that she found the most exciting
right.
section of
sure.
yeah.
you know, whatever it was.
So what do we think about the process? Do we think that this is a viable art form that, you know, could you imagine this printed on a canvas, printed on photo paper, hanging behind your couch... Hanging up in a museum, hanging up in a science museum. Where do you think imagery like this would be most applicable?
Well, there were some showcases of these photographs, the hard drugs series in specific, showcased at some German museum. It seemed like it was a more contemporary museum for modern art. Jesus Christ, it was a bad exhibition. It was fucking the worst hanging job I've ever seen in my life. They had two of the photographs. One of them, I think, was the MDMA, and the other was heroin, laying on the fucking floor. These things are like, you know, 30 by 30 inches in a frame, laying on the fucking floor. The rest of them, which were about 14 by 14, maybe, you know, they were all pretty square shaped, hanging on the wall. Some of them were like 11 feet up the wall, hung purposely crooked. None of them had any, you know, relation.
So it's like someone high on drugs hung the drugs.
Yeah. It looks like an asshole that worked at the gallery hung the drugs.
What makes you think the alcohol, like this dry martini and champagne, are so much more colorful in composition? Content makes up so much colors and
well, what is she using to photograph these? It is... What sort of microscope? Because depending on the microscope, you're going to input a light source.
It could have just been a digital microscope that's capable of taking in a photograph of whatever is in the lens at the time.
I
mean, they make them now that they just connect to computer via USB and...
Yeah, but it's going to have, I mean, it's going to have some sort of eye. Yep. That eye is going to capture light that is traveling through or reflecting off of.
Mm-hmm.
And so the alcohol is going to have a broader spectrum of...
light reflecting. Light,
I mean, because, yeah, there's more color coming off of the alcohol because you do have, like you said, Aaron, you've got more chemicals in the alcohol, in the beer,
mm-hmm.
and in the drinks that are going to show up differently via... whatever source she's using to take these photographs.
Well, the only reference I could find to the process for how these are taken is it says that they're photographed on exposed negative film. I don't know if that means it's traditional photography or if it's something that the material is actually placed on so that the microscope can photograph it. Also... I really question how much color is true to that negative. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, once you have a digital image of this, they're such abstract shapes. You have a lot of high, sharp contrast areas. You could just go hog wild with some fucking color contrast all you want. I mean, there's endless amounts of filters and combinations in Photoshop that could make this interesting or boring. But the colors do fit well with the imagery of the series, I think. However, the hanging job that I saw was fucking atrocious.
And that's actually something that bothers me. When you go to see a gallery exhibit that's, say, paintings or photographs, and they try to make the hanging an art piece itself, it distracts from your ability to actually view the artwork. You're shooting yourself in the foot by basically making me hating my experience trying to look at your artwork.
Yeah.
It'd be like, you know, covering a floor with a bunch of tacks, telling everyone to take their shoes off before viewing your artwork at the very back of the gallery.
Yeah, it's probably synonymous with just posting on the description card, "You probably shouldn't buy this."
Yeah.
That would be as effective as a bad hanging job.
Yeah. And I'm sure that she had some, very, you know, haughty reasoning behind her, the way that these photographs were arranged in that gallery.
Yeah, that was just one gallery, though. I saw another couple images where they were hung, you know, in line with one another, evenly spaced, and it was nice looking. It was,
yeah,
you know, would have been much more approachable in that respect.
I mean, I'm sure it also comes down to the gallery. I mean, the gallery's probably going to sit there and go, "We do want to sell these, so no, you cannot hang them 11 feet in the air, and no, you may not leave those on the ground where people will step on them."
Mm-hmm.
Are you an idiot? What drugs are you taking? Please point to the images.
Yeah.
It's
kind of interesting, the title of the series, though. It reminds me a lot of the lyrics in the song Eclipse by Pink Floyd, the last song that's on Dark Side of the Moon, which, you know, is about the descent into drug madness.
Right.
But there's a line in the song that says, "All that you touch, all that you feel," and it fits really well with this kind of crazy imagery.
So what drink and or drug would you want to see this process for?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you right now, I want to see what a fucking apple teeny looks like.
Apple teeny.
What if it turns out not to be green? How mind-blowing would that be?
Let's see the duck fart.
The duck fart. What is that freaking...
Is that a drink?
I think it's a drink.
What is that disgusting...
That'd be a shot. She needs to do a series of shots.
Ooh.
Because there are some weird shots.
What was that disgusting shot that you could buy at Christie's that was like, it was tequila, hot sauce, and mayonnaise?
What?
Yeah. You never heard of that?
No.
I saw one person try it and they went to the bathroom about 5 minutes later.
Sounds like the worst thing ever.
Yeah, I don't think I would
call that the Carolina.
What was it supposed to taste like? What was it again?
I think it was tequila, hot sauce, maybe Tabasco, and just like a glob of mayonnaise.
Hellman's?
Who the fuck cares? I don't know. I'd probably want to see what a dark and stormy looks like under a microscope. Or maybe one of those extremely nice craft beers that's like, you know, $50 a bottle or something.
Like a Rogue Limited Imperial Stout.
Mm-hmm. Something that's a heavy beer.
You can,
we see the particulates.
I'd almost wonder if a heavier, darker beer would be harder to photograph.
Well, I don't know. I would imagine some of those drugs like heroin is probably, you know...
True.
Not very colorful when you look at it, the naked eye. But yeah, these totally look like Trapper Keeper covers from the mid-90s.
Man, the colors.
It's cool.
Alcohol.
It's cool, but I think that's it. I don't think she's going to be able to do too much else with this.
As much as I could see these hanging at a medical facility or something, I see them more likely to end up hanging at, like, a bar.
Yeah, the novelty of them.
I mean, especially the beer ones. Yeah. I mean, you have this very nice, clean,
high-class
lounge bar sort of place, and then you have these photographs hanging up either behind the bar or hanging up, you know, along the walls. And, you know, someone's like, whoa, what is that? And you're like, it's what you're drinking. Or it's like, you can just go, I'll have one of those.
Yeah.
That could be your whole menu.
And then in the bathroom, you have the pictures of the cocaine, the heroin, and the LSD. And you go to the bathroom, you go, I'll have one of those.
I'll have the MDMA, please.
Or you go see your guy in the alley, and he pulls open his trench coat and just has photos of him.
Yeah, he's got a nice professional portfolio.
This is what mine looks like under here. Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, I really like to see how the granules look here.
I'm a dealer, and I'm also a photographer.
I'm really enjoying the contrast you have with your heroin, but I think your LSD is truly capturing what I'm looking to experience.
Yeah.
So I'll take an ounce of that, and we'll be good to go. All right, cool.
Let me get your card.
So we're going to continue our conversation with listener-submitted topics. We've got another one from a listener. Apparently there's a big uproar in the city of Durham.
Durham.
What's going on? I'm not from Durham. I don't know. We're in Raleigh, so we know
I understand.
Nothing.
Well, you're on the outskirts.
Yeah, I'm also Durham. Yeah. I'm the outskirts of Durham.
Well, there's...
A couple weeks ago.
There's an artist and an entire community upset at this... gorgeous mural of the Eno River that was painted over by a new web development company that came into Durham. So in 1996, there was a mural artist named Emily Weinstein who painted a gigantic mural of the Eno River on the side of the furniture building on Morris Street in downtown Durham. It was a huge, huge wall space that she painted this on. I don't know the exact dimensions. I couldn't find it, but I've seen it in person before, and it would have been a substantial mural. She cites that it was a gift to Durham. It had funding originally from the Durham Arts Council, and she absolutely paid out of pocket a lot for it. And Durham accepted it as such. I mean, it was a gorgeous mural. The project took 6 or so months to create, in which time Emily claims that she mixed over 1,000 colors and lovingly collected reference of like more than 800 animals, flowers, and trees, and proceeded to include every single one of them in the mural. As I said, it was extremely nice. It was a quality landscape. It was a successful representational work that absolutely sets itself apart from most of the cautious, quick, boring, and non-controversial landscapes that you see in other places. Flash forward to this year when a web development company called the Cactus Group, Cactus spelled C-A-K-T-U-S, which is a web development company, moved to Durham, bought the historic building that this mural was painted on, and began renovating it inside and out. Without so much as a heads up to the artist or a public forum in which the community could decide the fate of the mural, the Cactus Group painted over it in beige. Now, they claim that they met up with the Historical Preservation Committee of Durham, and they told them, I would assume the scenario one is this. They asked them if they could paint it. The historical committee said, you can paint it this color. They painted it. To my understanding, the community's nearly unanimous resentment towards the decision has resulted in the CEO of the company, the Cactus Group, posting quite a lengthy, regret-filled apology on their website, in which it's pretty obvious that they screwed up big time. Right. I mean, he said, you know, I'm extremely sorry. This was a huge mistake. We really should have considered the desires and needs of the community. If I had it my way, we would never have done this. As compensation, though, the company has promised to hold a meeting to invite the public to come and share ideas for another mural.
So they're making it right.
Well, they're also restoring...
Because they fucked up royally.
Well, they're also restoring the bricked-up windows that would have been that would be in the middle of the mural to begin with, because they're doing a full restoration of the building to what it was as a furniture factory.
Well, I mean,
they would have been putting holes in the mural regardless to knock out for the new windows.
Yeah.
And I think with something like that, when you have an area that does care so much about what the buildings and the facades look like, especially when they've, you know, had a piece of artwork like that painted on them, I think they could have gotten away with it if they had included everyone with the full plan. You know, that we're completely restoring this building to what it was, facade-wise. And in doing that, we're going to be reopening these windows. That's going to put giant holes in this mural that's chipping and cracking that's been up for years. We'd like to do something else, but we want your input. And then get the artist involved. Get the original artist involved.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have her find out, you know, via some news and observer, you know, someone calling her up and going, oh, hey, I saw your mural got painted over. What's going on?
What? My shit?
Well, yeah. Actually, and this will be a veiled attempt at trying to recreate a conversation. Dutters and I actually discussed this matter last weekend. For you listeners, it was probably 3 weekends ago. Anyway, we were talking about what rights does an owner of a building have in the decision-making of the look of the building. So when we first approached this idea, you know, I just was doing counterpoint with Dutters a little bit. And my thinking is, I bought a piece of property. I own this piece of property. I should be able to do with it whatever I so deem. Mm-hmm.
You can't, as much as that is a really nice sentiment, if you own a building in a downtown area, you can't do that to begin with. Like, there are certain if it's a historic area, there's certain laws, all that stuff. But then also, I wasn't even sure. Did they actually buy the building?
Yeah.
Or are they doing, like, a 99-year lease?
No, I think they bought it.
So they bought it outright. So they do own the building.
So a counterpoint to this idea is a local Raleigh couple, and, you know, this is all in the news, especially in North Carolina. They purchased a lot of land in a historical part of Raleigh. They decided to build their own house. The house, they got all the permits they needed. The city approved of everything. The designs of the house, everything. They were at the 11th hour of building their dream house when all of a sudden the construction of the house came to a screeching halt because the community disagreed with the look and feel of the house. The house was a very modern house. It was very progressive in architecture style, and it didn't fit the colonial historical feel of the other houses. So the community put a hold on this family's investment of their house.
Like half a million or something? It's an expensive house.
And with that being said, they got all the rights, all the permits, everything they needed, and then all of a sudden, Raleigh said, whoa, 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 we don't like the way... It's not that it's not a beautiful house, it just doesn't fit our motif.
It was the Homeowners Association.
That's right.
Yeah, these people, if they are building a $1.5 million house in a neighborhood that has that kind of competition, you know, other colonial houses... You can probably, you know, bet that the people that live there are probably part of the homeowners association. They're probably on board of directors, with trustees for the fucking city. You know,
well, now the family is suing members. The city of Raleigh.
Yeah.
Because of how much money they just want to recoup, if anything, the money that they invested in.
Yeah, I mean, that's some serious damage.
Well, I mean, the thing is that's a different argument, because meow, you're talking private property.
Did you just say meow, you're talking?
Meow.
Well, no, because the building in downtown Durham is still private property of that
company. It's private property, but it's in a public location.
And it's a historically protected building.
Yeah, right.
So they have to abide by extremely specific building codes.
Whereas with this, they are not in historic. They obviously, because if they had been in historic, they wouldn't have been able to build that house to begin with at all.
Right.
The fact that they were able to means that they're, you know, they are in an area that's a private property. That's an issue between them and the homeowners association, and the city of Raleigh shouldn't even get involved in that. That should be some other private thing going on. I mean, I don't even know the details of that house thing.
I think they're probably entitled to sue in that respect.
But I think with this thing, the Cactus Group or whatever, with them moving in and painting over the mural, I think they could have gotten away with painting over the mural if they'd done it properly. By just kind of doing it real hush-hush, real quiet, real quick, that method is not going to work real well.
No.
Obviously it's not going to work real well.
Well, I think they're doing the right thing by bringing it back. Like, when they moved in, they probably didn't know that the mural had that much historical significance.
The Cactus Group. It would take some delving into where they actually come from, but I would be willing to assume that they moved to Durham from Raleigh because of how much it costs to, you know, have a space such as that. Durham is an up-and-coming technology city. They probably didn't give a fuck.
If anything, what I kind of probably assumed happened, this is just completely assumption, is that one foreman who just wasn't thinking said, you know, somebody said, hey, boss, what do we do with that mural over there? I don't know, man, just cover it up. You know, let's go ask the city of Durham.
They had to get the paint approved.
Yeah, the paint has to be a specific type.
Because if you're painting outdoors and cars pass by, the paint has to be a certain color because of distraction ordinance.
But if the city of Durham signed off on it, then it wasn't important to the city of Durham.
No, but the city of Durham means you go down to the permit office, you walk up to a person at a desk and go, I'm painting this wall this color. And they look at it and they go,
they have a list of, like, you know, probably Sherwin-Williams.
Yeah, and they go, okay,
Pantone colors.
You don't
actually
have to show them a picture of the wall you're going to be painting. So the person at the office probably never even knew this was the wall that had the mural on it. They just knew it was a wall at this location.
And then the city inspector will come in later and say,
I guess the point I'm trying to make is don't assume that it was the company. If anything, probably assume that it was probably one dude who was just trying to get the ball rolling on things, you know?
I don't know, man.
Definitely the company. I mean, if someone in the company is sitting down with the contractor going, we want this wall painted. And the contractor's going, okay, what color you want it painted? We can do these colors right here. It's approved by the city of Durham to paint walls this color out exterior.
Mm.
And the guy goes, I like that paint chip. We're going with that color.
Yep.
And he's like, okay. Because contractors don't make a move without approval from the person writing the check.
Mm-hmm.
They do not make a move. They will not make a move. My company has dealt with contractors as a subcontractor. Like, dealing with companies, they will double, triple, quadruple check before they drill a hole.
Yeah, if the Cactus Group gave a shit about the mural and the contractor painted over it, they would have, you know, been out that much money because the, you know, Cactus Group would have been totally pissed.
And the Cactus Group could sit there and not pay the contractor and actually go after the contractor for painting the mural.
Yeah.
But because the contractor has signed documentation protecting him, because he's a contractor. He's done this before. This isn't his first rodeo. So he knows, I need to protect myself. So I want it in signed triplicate that it is okay for me to paint over this mural. So it is someone in the Cactus Group who sat down and was like, we want to restore this building. And part of that restoration is we want to get rid of this mural because we want it to look like what it looked like when it was an old furniture factory. And there was no mural on the side of that furniture factory.
And the way in which the apology was done, or was written, it was obvious they were at fault. Like, he was, you know, almost stating that it was his personal...
I'm on their website right now.
Fault.
July 11, 2014.
Is that Comic Sans? What kind of...
Removal of mural. Like, that is a blog post that they have.
Mm-hmm.
We have recently heard complaints about the painting over of the mural on the side of 108 Morris, the building we purchased and are restoring in downtown Durham. I am personally distressed at this response. I see now, in retrospect, where we needed to work harder to discuss our decision with the community. In our enthusiasm to bring more life to downtown Durham via ground-level retail space and offices for our staff, we were blind to what the public response might be to the mural. Its removal was not a decision taken lightly, and one done in consultation with the Historic Preservation Commission. However,
but not the community, and not the Arts Council, and not the artist.
However, we handled this poorly. We apologize for not making more efforts to include the community in this decision. I do wish to emphasize that though we are moving from Carrboro to Durham, many of us are Durhamites, including two of three owners. Many are small staff, blah, 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 23, feel far from outsiders, blah, blah, blah. We're from Durham.
Yeah.
Durham.
We love Durham. Sorry, don't hate us. Come get your website made here.
Yeah. It's the building project of personal diploma one. Durham, downtown Durham. We love Durham. Unfortunately, in restoring a long abandoned historic building that had been remodeled by many hands over the decades remodeled on the interior, we had to make sacrifices to return the building to its original 1910 state. We needed to unbrick the windows, which would
also remove
sections of Emily Weinstein's 1996 Eno River mural. So they did know that they would be, you know...
So it was a preservation requirement that they had to do.
Yeah.
Okay. So they were returning the building to its original state by, renovating it. With that being said, if the building's that old, things have happened to the building, including in 1996, somebody painted a mural on it. it's a catch 22.
If they had come out ahead of time,
they weren't destroying history; they were trying to preserve history.
I think they made the mistake of, in this case, they made the poor decision to ask forgiveness as opposed to ask permission. And what they should have done is come out and said, this is our plan. And you make it public. You put posters up, whatever. Come to a community meeting. Get in touch with the artist. Get her behind it. Get her to come out and say, yeah, listen. Like, you can get a photographer to come out and take some really nice photographs.
It's had a good 18-year run as a mural.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty long run for an outdoor mural.
Yeah.
You get out. You take some nice pictures. You say you're going to put a panoramic shot of the original mural in your front lobby. So people can come and see this thing as it used to look. So you're going to have all that, but your plan is to completely restore the building to its original facade. The way it looked in 18, whenever this thing was built originally.
1910.
Yeah, so you've got, but in doing that, you're going to be, cutting out windows, or returning the windows that used to be there that were bricked up. So you're putting giant holes in the mural, to begin with. So, get everyone behind your plan, as opposed to going forward with your plan and then hoping that you'll get forgiveness afterwards. Because bad news will stick with people a lot longer than good news will.
It's very true.
And
controversy is going to stick with them for a long time, I'm sure.
I mean, it's going to be one of those things where it's like you're trying to establish... I mean, obviously, they do well as a company, well enough to buy a building.
Mm-hmm.
But... it's going to be difficult for them to get more local businesses involved when you're partnering with the business that tore down that mural, aren't you?
Yeah.
Or painted over that mural. And people are going to remember that. They're not going to remember, oh yeah, that company that did that beautiful restoration job on that old historic building.
Yeah. So they
kind of shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah. But they're claiming that they're going to try to rectify it in some fashion.
I mean, there are ways for them to do this and do this right. I just think they took the first step wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, it's going to be difficult to recover.
Yeah, well, they're inviting the public to speak their mind now about doing another mural somewhere. And the artist, Emily Weinstein, who originally painted the mural, said that she hopes that the loss will result in another mural painted by new artists, regardless of the location. But anyway, so companies that move to Durham and assume that they're not going to leave a footprint with shit all over it, should reconsider. Apparently.
Yeah. So, a couple weeks ago, there was mischief afoot, Aaron.
It wasn't a couple weeks ago, it was last week.
It was...
the 14th. Wednesday.
Damn. Which would be a week and a half ago.
There was mischief in the Raleigh
I keep forgetting
area.
This is coming out in like 2 weeks.
Yeah. There was a young gentleman and his lady friend who were touring the Science Museum in downtown Raleigh, and they took it upon themselves to help themselves to some of the artifacts.
They adopted.
Hey, there was several things they picked up.
Yeah.
Some of the things including a antique doily, some antique tools, some fake cabbage, all which...
That was from the History Museum.
Right. All of which equated to less than $1,000 worth of items. But there was one item in particular that this young gentleman wanted to impress his girlfriend with, which was a small replica of...
an Edmontosaurus, which is a baby hatchling duck-billed dinosaur.
Is that the one that has the...
It was Ducky from Land
That's No, that's
time.
A... It's the P. Yeah,
Ducky?
Whatever.
Paracephalosaurus or something, I don't know.
So they stole a baby dinosaur. And what was this baby dinosaur valued at?
Around 10 grand.
$10,000. I woke up and was getting ready to work, and we had the news on and whatnot. And this news story broke. And I watched it, and at this time, they didn't know who the suspects were who took the alleged dinosaur replica. But like
no, who allegedly took? They knew the dinosaur replica was real. They allegedly took
the replica was real.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well no, you said they took the alleged replica. They allegedly took the replica.
But I was literally walking out the door, heard this, stopped, and had to listen to the story. This was quite.
This made national news.
Did it make national
news? It did. It went all the way up to CNN, man.
Yep.
So, when I heard the
famous for this
one. My first thought was it was getting words like felony and grand larceny came up.
It's a state property.
Sure. But part of me kind of felt like the news reel itself was broadcasting to just scare the two individuals into returning the dinosaur. Because let's face it, it was...
That would have been easy to do. They had some pretty high quality video footage.
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
Idiots.
I kind of felt like, if anything, like these kids shouldn't like face real hard time unless there's a history of, you know, obvious...
There's got to be a history. Like, you don't wake up one day and go, today, this is the day.
No,
that baby dinosaur...
It was a spur of the moment.
Coming home with me.
It was a spur of the moment.
They walked in there and they walked back out and they came back in with a larger bag and took it. Yep. There was no spur of the moment there.
Oh, you think it was planned?
Absolutely. You can see
in
the footage.
They walked in, they look around.
What is there to gain?
Then they leave, and then they come back later and wait till there's no one around. He just hops over, grabs it, throws it in her purse that she happens to have. A huge purse.
You know what it is? Slugsworth is starting his own museum, and they're trying to steal the secret formula dinosaur and sell it to Slugsworth.
I bet the scenario was these...
That was a reference to We're Back.
No! Willy Wonka!
Oh, I was thinking We're Back with John Goodman as the T-Rex.
They were trying to be Dennis Nedry from Jurassic Park.
Nedry?
Yes.
Yeah. That's a better reference. But a terrible one still, because there's no dino DNA in a replica.
See, nobody cares. Anyway, the scenario is probably this.
Take it away, Bilbo.
She was like, oh, Kenny, look at the little dinosaur. He's like, yo, baby, you want that dinosaur? I get that dinosaur for you. And they stole it. And then they realized that their faces were all over the news. They freaked out. They panicked. And they, you know, turned themselves in, quote unquote. The funny thing that I read was it said that just some guy delivered it to a rear service entrance at the Life and Sciences Museum and just left it there. It could have been stolen again. They definitely would have went to prison at that point. I mean, it was just in like a fucking bag.
One of the things that I felt while hearing this is that this dinosaur replica valued at $10,000. Granted, the construction of it was probably not $10,000.
I disagree.
I know plenty, present company included, sculptors and artists who would love to make a baby dinosaur for far below $10,000 of North Carolina taxpayer money.
But they've probably, I mean, it's probably made by a property house whose job is museum replica.
It's probably made in-house, yeah.
And, I mean, we actually have an expert on this that we could get in contact with about this sort of in-house production work.
I mean, I can give you a breakdown of the construction of this from start to finish.
Because I want to know what 10 grand went into here.
So, you've got the entire exhibit plans for that specific area. You've got the, let's call it the... Edmontosaurus exhibit. Mm-hmm. You've got a nest that's composed of all these other different dinosaurs that are specifically fabricated to fit into this area. You've got a guy that sketches it out,
right.
A guy that budgets everything, all the materials, a project planner, so to speak. You've got a sculptor that sits down, creates the armature. He sculpts everything out of clay. That probably takes 20 hours. Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess 20 hours because of changes, because of whoever the project planner is has to sign off on the authenticity, the correctness of this dinosaur. They probably have to get some guy from one of the upstairs offices who might be a paleontologist, might be, I don't know, a dinosaur feature specialist.
Some curator sort of expert.
Comes in, signs off on everything. Then you have the master mold maker who comes in and has to prep everything, get the materials together. Probably ends up having to roto or vacuum cast multiple copies of this with the polymer resin that they claimed that it was made out of. That then has to get signed off by the same people. They have to make sure that it'll fit into the space properly. I would assume then it has to be cleaned up and prepped again to be fit into place. And they have to have a master painter come in, paint the damn thing, seal it. Then they have to have somebody come in and install everything. That probably took 3 months.
And 10 also, grand. I mean, you gotta think,
it's a state job, too.
All those people are getting paid salary.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not, I mean, they're not making a lot of money, but they aren't making, you know, chump change. They're making.
Well, this is one element of a bigger project.
Yeah, it is. But mm-hmm. I mean, that is one element that is that's like a showcase piece. You're going to spend more time on the pieces that are going to draw more attention than you are on a fern.
Mm-hmm.
So, like with the fern, it's going to be like, okay, we can outsource this to a company that mass produces this particular.
Yeah.
You know, fern.
They make plastic plants.
Yeah, just run out to Michael's and pick up some ferns.
But for a showpiece that is going to get a lot of attention from kids, from, you know, whatever, it has to have, you know, accuracy, you know, scientific accuracy, all of this stuff. You're going to take time and make sure it is right. And that's money.
And it's probably insured on top of that.
Yeah. I mean, the whole exhibit's insured. For people's stupidity as well as if, obviously,
I could see it theft. I could see it easily fetching 10 grand. The problem is, that kind of number, I don't know what was in these teenagers' minds. If he was giving it to his girlfriend as like a trophy that he was hoping to get.
Because it's not something you can sell. It's like, it's right,
yeah, you'd never be able to sell it for 10 grand.
It's right up there with a pirate bench at East Carolina that was stolen. It's right up there with the Seahawk that was stolen from UNCW.
Big boy.
Big boy. I mean, it's right up there with any mascot or anything that gets stolen by some young, stupid teenager right. who's like, I'm going to stick this behind my couch. They're not trying to resell this, because you can't. Hmm. You can't resell something like that you steal.
Maybe he was hoping the whole ordeal would get him laid.
Probably.
In the pursuit of vagina, this young whippersnapper ends up in prison.
That's better than the guy who, in the pursuit of vagina, got stuck in one.
Yeah, yes. Oh, man.
Reference.
That was a good follow-up.
reference to an episode that I wasn't even in.
Yep.
Nice.
All right.
Yeah. No, it's stupid. I mean, it is so stupid that yeah. someone would even do that. Yeah. I mean, really, it does. It boils down to just, how stupid are you?
Yeah, at first I was like, wow, I've really got to admire the balls on this kid to go in there and steal that. Then I just realized, wow, that kid's a fucking idiot.
Yeah. You have a tale here at school?
It's a pretty short one.
Involve a ring?
Frodo.
Sam. I am Sam. I'm not going to be Frodo. Sam's the real hero of that story. He carried everything,
he did.
And then he carried Frodo.
Yep, share the load.
Yeah.
I have a very, very short tale of the art school to share. One of the first semesters that we were doing foundations classes, I was friends with a few upperclassmen. When I say upperclassmen, I think they were like, you know, juniors in their second, 2.5 or 3rd year. We had the task during foundations classes where we had to draw these goddamn stools that were just made up out of ellipses. It was like you had the seat, which was a circle, then you had four legs that came down at a slight angle, and they were structurally supported by another ring. And they were a fucking pain in the ass to draw because they were all composed of straight lines or ellipses. And the teachers loved them because they were tough practice. If you could get the ellipse right, you could get the second ellipse right, then you could get the lines right. That was the idea. But we did this day in and day out for probably 3 or 4 months, and it was just the most annoying shit ever. So one night, we were in there trying to finish projects before our respective deadlines, and a few of the upperclassmen and me got it into our heads that we would like to do something with all of the stools so that we wouldn't have to draw them the next day. And what we did was we stacked them one on top of the other until every single stool in the room. There was probably 25, 30 stools in the room, just one giant tower of stools that went almost all the way to the ceiling. Dangerous as shit. Very impressive upon reflection. Like, I don't know how the hell we were able to do it. We actually ended up having several people stack them from underneath and then lifting. Or lifting them and then stacking them underneath. But I remember, I didn't see this, but I remember that I heard that the teacher came in the next day, and it was a teacher that didn't normally use that classroom, but they were on like a rotating schedule. Mm-hmm. And she walked in, saw that, and started crying.
She probably thought thought the art school was haunted.
No. Who knows? She could have. I know which teacher it was. She absolutely did not deserve that to happen to her. She was one of the sweetest, best, you know, instructors that I had. But I think she thought it was a personal attack. Like, the sure. students were upset with her, and she didn't know how to deal with it. But
they're rubbing stools against her.
It was impressive. It was probably a 15-20 foot tall stack of these stools.
Those are tall ceilings in the drawing room, because mm-hmm. that makes sense. But what an impressive stool.
Yep.
Aaron's Giant Stool. The name of
it. yep. Aaron's Giant Stool. On that shitty note. yes.
The next one will be better.